So today we're reading from the 11th canto, chapter 6, which is titled The Yadu Dynasty Retires to Prabhash, text number 18. Smayabaloka lavadasita bhavahari.
Smayabaloka lavadasita bhavahari.
Thru mandala prahitav saurata mantra shandai. Patnyas tu shoda shasahasra mananga barne. Yas yendriyam vimatitum karanena vibhya. Smaya. Smiling. Avaloka. Of a glance. Lava. By fractions. Dasita. Having shown bhava, their feelings, hari, enchanting, brumandala, by which arch of the eyebrows, prahita, launched, surata, of conjugal love, mantra, messages, shondai, by the impudent advances, patnya, wise, to, but, Sodasya Sahasram, 16,000, Ananga, of Cupid, Banai, by the arrows, Yasya, whose, Indriyam, senses, Vimartitum, to agitate, Karanai, with all their devices, Navibhya, they were not able. Translation and purport of the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, you are living with 16,000 exquisitely beautiful aristocratic wives. By their irresistible coy and smiling glances, and by their lovely arching eyebrows, they send you messages of eager conjugal love, but they are completely unable to disturb the mind and senses of your Lordship. Purport. In the previous verse, it was clearly stated that no material object can attract the senses of the Lord. Now in this verse, it is demonstrated that the Lord has no desire to enjoy even spiritual sense gratification. Krishna is complete himself. He is the reservoir of all pleasure, and he does not lust after anything material or spiritual. The argument may be given that Krishna, in order to please his wife Satyabhama, stole a parijata flower from heaven, and thus appeared to be a henpecked husband under the control of his loving wife. Although Krishna is sometimes conquered by the love of his devotees, he is never influenced by the desire to enjoy like an ordinary lusty materialistic person. The non-devotees cannot understand the overwhelming loving feelings exchanged between the Lord and his pure devotees. Krishna may be conquered by our intense love for him, and thus pure devotees can control the Lord. For example, the elderly gopis in Vrindavan would clap their hands in different rhythms to make Krishna dance. And in Dwarka, Satyabhama ordered Krishna to bring her a flower as proof of his love for her. As stated in Srinivasacharya's song to the Swix Goswamis, Gopi Bhava Rasamritabdi Lahari Kalala Magna Moho. The love between the Lord and his pure devotee is an ocean of spiritual bliss. But at the same time, Krishna remains completely self-satisfied. Krishna indifferently gave up the company of the incomparable young dancers of Rajabhumi, the gopis, and went to Mathura at the request of his uncle Akura. Thus neither the gopis of Vrindavan nor the queens of Dwarka could arouse an enjoying spirit in Krishna. When all is said and done, pleasure in this world means sex, but this mundane sexual attraction is simply a perverted reflection of the transient loving affairs between Krishna and his eternal associates in the spiritual world. The gopis of Vrindavan are unsophisticated village girls, whereas the queens in Dwarka are aristocratic young ladies. But both the gopis and the queens are overwhelmed with love for Krishna. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna displays the highest perfection of beauty, strength, wealth, fame, knowledge and renunciation, and is thus completely satisfied by his own supreme position. He reciprocates spiritual loving affairs with the gopis and queens simply for their sake. Only fools think that Lord Krishna could be attracted by the perverted illusory pleasures to which we are poor conditioned souls are so blindly attached. Therefore, everyone should recognise the supreme transcendental vision of the Personality of Godhead and surrender to him. That is the clear implication of this statement by the demigods. Translation again. My Lord, you are living with 16,000 exquisitely beautiful aristocratic wives. By their irresistible coy and smiling glances, and by their lovely arching eyebrows, they send you messages of eager conjugal love. But they are completely unable to disturb the mind and senses of your Lordship. But here we have the demigod speaking, isn't it? Demigods are marvelling that Lord Krishna, he has the 16,000 most beautiful women in creation as his wives. but he's not... their beauty and their attractive qualities don't disturb the mind and the sense of the Lordship. We know from the other page of the Bhagavatam that sometimes the demigods, their mind and senses become disturbed by someone else's beauty. Chandra had illicit connection with Brihaspati's wife, and Brihaspati, I think, had connection with his brother's wife, like that. So sometimes the demigods themselves, they are attracted in an illicit fashion to somebody else's wife. But this type of attraction doesn't apply to the Supreme Person of Godhead. Sometimes when we're under the influence of the modes of material nature, we start to conceive of the Supreme Personality of God in terms of our own conceptions. So we put our mundane conceptions on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we may hear that the Supreme Personality of Godhead likes to be worshipped, and we start to think, oh, I've met so many people in my life, they like to be worshipped by others, and they're all horrible persons, and therefore if this applies to God, he must also be a horrible person. Somebody may use mundane logic like that, but actually Krishna likes the worship not because he likes to so much to hear his own glory, but he likes to see the living energies surrender to him and worship the spiritual master, the pure devotees, and himself, because it's actually leading to living energies purification. It's actually for the benefit of the living energies that they worship Krishna. And we see that when they don't worship Krishna, it's not that they don't worship at all. So sometimes the materialistic person, they think, well, I don't have to worship anybody. But we see they're always worshipping somebody. They're worshipping the sports stars, the movie stars, the music stars, the politicians. Isn't it? So many badges were sold, Obama Barrack. So many posters, so many photos were sold, Obama Barrack. They want to stick up on their walls. He's the latest Mahajan, the latest great personality, who's going to deliver us from all the previous problems. Of course, when he ran for election, he was saying, I will do like that. If change, you can believe it. But now he's elected, he's saying, well, maybe I won't actually have to do all I promised. The politicians, film stars, movie stars. Even this year, this is the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birth this year, and the 150th anniversary of his Origin of the Species. So many universities are having a Darwin Day, where they can come and they can glorify Charles Darwin, his theory of evolution, deliver us from the ignorance, because we didn't know how life originated, and now he taught us how life originated from chemicals. So he delivered us from ignorance. So they worship Charles Darwin, a materialistic person. Even prestigious institutions like Melbourne University, they send me, because I was a student there, they send me their email newsletter, and that they're having so many functions in connection with Charles Darwin. So he becomes the Mahajan, the great person. He delivered us from the ignorance of believing that life came from God. And we worship him because it's his 200th anniversary of his birth. But actually, the New Scientist magazine, which is like a prestigious scientific magazine, it's on the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birth. Their cover story was Darwin was wrong. So some points they were saying he was actually wrong about. So this is how they glorify their Mahajan, their great personality. Like on his 20th anniversary, Darwin, the cover of New Scientist magazine, was Darwin was wrong. So the living entity, bewildered by the material energy, he finds so many objects for worship which are inappropriate, persons who will let him down ultimately. Because sense gratification is ultimately disappointing, ultimately it's subject to the time factor, and ultimately it's frustrating. It's impermanent. I think it's impermanent, we're always anxiety. When will it end? or it may end in the future. So when we start to conceive of God, we can't put our mundane conceptions on it. In the mundane conception, one might think of somebody who has so many relationships with women that he's some sort of playboy or ladies' man. Sometimes they have these expressions, playboy, ladies' man. And this is quite abominable from some materialist, some sort of more pious materialist. I say this is very abominable. But Krishna is reciprocating with those 16,000 wives. If somebody has a wife and a mistress or something, that becomes troublesome because there's a lack of integrity. Krishna has 16,000 wives, and then he expands himself 16,000 times, so he can, at every night he can be with each of his 16,000 wives. There's a chapter in the 10th canto where Narada Muni goes to each of the palaces of Krishna and Dwarka, and in each one of them Krishna is enjoying with these 16,000 wives, enjoying in different ways. So he doesn't compromise his integrity by having 16,000 wives. If somebody has a wife and a mistress, they compromise their integrity. They have two girlfriends, two partners, or what are you going to call it? They compromise their integrity. That won't be accepted by, it won't be accepted by their wife if they have a mistress. It won't be accepted by their mistress if they have a wife. So they compromise their integrity. But Krishna, there's no compromise of integrity. So Krishna's activities are always absolute. They're not on the mundane platform. Now, the materialistic person, if they don't have the knowledge of the Shruti, the Vedic scriptures, they may reach the wrong conclusion about Krishna because of their material conceptions. Therefore, one is advised to hear from the Shastra, hear from the spiritual master, hear from the pure devotees. So recently I saw there was something, a debate about these bushfires between different Christians. So one Christian priest, he was saying that before these bushfires happened, that he saw that Victoria had passed this very demonic abortion law. So last year, apparently, Victoria, they passed a very liberal, from their perspective, a very liberal abortion law, which allowed abortion in the last 3 months of the pregnancy. So the pregnancy lasts 9 months, and they passed this law which allows abortion in the last 3 months. Previously, their thinking was that after 6 months of pregnancy, the baby's fully formed, therefore it was not allowed to be killed. That was their conception. Of course, Prabhupada's conception was completely different. He said even contraception is sinful. And Prabhupada's conception was very merciful. He said there are so many souls waiting to take birth in the human form so they can get on with the human mission. And this contraception, so laying their ability to take birth in the human form of life. So he was saying that even this contraception, which you know even most of the Christian priests accept is okay, he was saying that even this was sinful because it causes harm to other living entities. Other living entities are ready to take birth in the human form of life, but they're being hindered by this contraception. But then you get into the last 3 months of pregnancy, so then the fetus has been growing for 9 months within the womb. From the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand it's a very uncomfortable situation in the womb. Sometimes they have this expression, fetal position, because someone sleeps in what they call a fetal position. Their neck and back arch and their legs up, and they call it sleeping in the fetal position. They imagine that you're very comfortable in the womb. But actually, according to Shastra, it's not a very comfortable experience at all. One is arched constantly. One's very cramped. There's no space to move, practically speaking, and one is singed by the fire of digestion from the mother. Therefore, it's advised that pregnant women don't eat food containing chili, because the chili increases the fire of digestion, which burns the baby even more. And also, the baby in that situation is very helpless. It's bitten by different worms, so it goes through that 9 months and it's waiting to be born. But then, if you abort the baby in those last 3 months, then it has to go back and start the process all over again. So obviously, a contraception is sinful, but an abortion in the last 3 months, then you can even more sinful, because all that difficulty of the baby is gone in preparation for birth. It has to go through that all again. So this Christian priest, he was saying that he saw these bushfires in a vision or a dream, and this was a result of passing this very liberal abortion law. Then other Christian priests, they came in and they argued, no, God would never do this. God would never send bushfires to wipe out people who had nothing to do with passing the abortion law and causing people to lose their homes and property and their family, their loved ones, whatever. God would never do like this. So this is an incorrect understanding of Christianity. So on the one hand, you have this Christian priest saying these bushfires are the result of passing this very demonic abortion law. And then you have on the other side, you have these other Christian priests. Oh, God would never, God is not vindictive. He would never cause people who had nothing to do with the law to lose their homes, their family, their loved ones, the property, possessions like that. So I was thinking, as a devotee, what is our response to that argument? How would we respond to that argument? So we often say that God is very merciful. So this is often the Christian conception, that God is very merciful. I take it God is very merciful. God is all-forgiving. Yes, we can say God is all-forgiving. It means whatever, no matter how many sinful activities you perform, you've never performed so many sinful activities that you can't be forgiven. And we say that when somebody starts chanting Hare Krishna, they clear all their sinful reactions. So because they call on Krishna, Krishna clears all their sinful reactions, even though they've done so many sinful things. Yes, so Krishna is all-forgiving, Krishna is all-merciful. You can't commit more sins than you can be forgiven for. Yes, that is true from the Vedic perspective. Krishna is all-forgiving, all-merciful. And Krishna, even though the living entity has been opposed to Krishna for so many births, he's been inimical to Krishna. He's hated religion, he's hated Brahmanas, he's hated cows. Krishna hasn't become angry. Krishna hasn't rejected living entity. He's not damned living entity for all time. Sometimes in Christianity you have this concept that somebody becomes damned for all time. They commit some sins and then they're damned for all time. Like Judas Iscariot, because he betrayed Jesus Christ and then he committed suicide, therefore he's damned for all time. So they have this concept in Christianity. No, but according to the Vedas, nobody is damned for all time. Yes, so this is all true. So God is all forgiving, all merciful. That is true. But at the same time, it's not that you can take advantage of that, that you can do more sinful activities and expect to get no reaction. So at the same time God is all merciful, all forgiving, God is also, or Krishna is also very strict, which means you're not allowed to trample on the rights of others. So if you want to kill cows and eat the flesh, you want to abort fetuses, you have to get reaction for that. There'll be suffering coming to you as a result of that. Why is there need for that suffering? Because you are doing something to others, causing others harm. You're trampling on the rights of others, you're causing others harm. In the future, somebody else is going to want to trample on the rights of others and cause others harm, and then this time you will become the victim of that person's desire. So Krishna's fulfilling all desires. If you think you can become happy by eating cow flesh, by ignoring religious principles, by aborting fetuses, Krishna gives you the chance to do that, but then you have to also eat the results of those fruitive activities. You have to experience the karma, the results of those previous activities. So one has to get the reaction for one's activities. So at the same time, as Krishna is all merciful, all forgiving, if you take advantage of that, you think, well, Krishna's going to forgive me, let me perform sinful activities, that won't be allowed. There's a story even in the Bible, the Gospels, that there was a prostitute, and then I think some of Jesus' disciples and some other people, they wanted to stone this prostitute to death. They were saying that this person's very sinful and therefore we should stone her to death. So they brought her in front of Jesus and they said, is this right? Should we stone her to death? And then Jesus Christ said, well, let those who haven't sinned cast the first stone. So when a saintly person speaks, then you don't want to just cheat a saintly person. You can't cheat a saintly person. So then all the people who wanted to stone this prostitute, they all went away. So then the prostitute was just left with Jesus. And Jesus said, you may go, but sin no more. So people, like Christians, they like to remember the part where Jesus says, you can go, but they don't like to remember the part, but sin no more. So Jesus forgave the prostitute, but he also warned, don't sin anymore. So yes, by chanting Hare Krishna, we can free ourselves from sinful reactions, but that doesn't mean we can perform more sinful activities and not expect to get some reaction, because God is also, he's all merciful, but he's also strict. He doesn't allow, it's not that he's vindictive, Like, I think in the Jewish religion, some of them have a concept that God is sort of vindictive, vengeance. And this actually stems from their own kind of mentality, because sometimes you see them, Gangasar Prabhu was mentioning yesterday how the Jews and Arabs, the fighting's been going on, you know, ever since we were kids. It used to be fights between Jews and Arabs when I was 10-year-old, and now I'm 47, and it's still going on. So the Arabs do something to the Jews, and the Jews something back, and then the Arabs do something to the Jews, and the Jews something back. It goes back and forth. And so they have this idea that God is vindictive. God isn't vindictive like this, that you've done something wrong to me, therefore I'm going to do something wrong to you. Rather, God lets one experience the results of one's activities. So you've harmed some other living entity. When some other living entity wants to harm somebody, you will become the victim of that. You have to pay the price for that. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, the American one that comes here all the time, says, if you want to play, you have to pay. So you want to play with the laws of material nature, then you have to pay the price in terms of karma. So it's not that God is vindictive, as may be conceived by some. It's not that he's whimsical also. As Christians sometimes think that, oh, we're very fallen, we're always inclined to sinful activities. Therefore, when God sees us performing sinful activities, he just sort of says, well, what can you expect? So they may be whimsical in their understanding of religion, but it doesn't mean that God becomes a whimsical supreme authority. God is very strict. We get the clear conception from the Vedas. God is very strict. So then the question is asked, then what about the bushfires? And so what is that? What's going on there with these bushfires in terms of God consciousness? So it's explained in the 12th canto. Maharaj Pariksit, as we know, he was cursed to die by the snake bird, to be killed by the snake bird. And actually he took the precaution. He sat in meditation in a high spot where a snake would not be easily able to get to. And he had Kashyapa Muni there, who was expert at counteracting snake bite. So he took the precautions to prevent being killed by the snake bite. But then the snake bird, it appeared in a human form, and it bribed Kashyapa Muni to go away. So there's a picture in the 12th canto of Kashyapa Muni carrying away all this gold. he was paid off, he was bribed. So then the snake bird was able to kill a Maharaj Pariksit. Like that. The man then changed into a snake bird, went and killed Maharaj Pariksit. So Maharaj Pariksit, he took the preventive measures, but still he was killed. So he wasn't totally fatalistic. He tried to take preventative measures, but they ultimately didn't work. So then his son, Maharaj Janmajai, he became very angry hearing about his father's death at the hands of a snake bird. So he then asked the priest to perform a yajna, a fire yajna, in which all the snakes in the entire universe would fall into the fire. There's also a picture in the 12th canto of the priest around this fire yajna, and all the snakes are falling into the fire. So Takshaka became frightened. He was being pulled towards the fire. He saw the snakes going into the fire. Takshaka was the snake bird that killed King Pariksit. He became frightened. He saw all the other snakes falling into the fire. So then he went to take shelter of Lord Indra. Sometimes when the citizens are being harassed, they take shelter of the government. So Takshaka, he was being harassed by this yajna, and he took shelter of Indra. So Indra, by his mystic power, was able to prevent Takshaka going to the fire. So then Maharaj Janmajai asked the priest, you're performing yajna and snakes are falling in, but the number one snake I want to fall into the fire is Takshaka. Why hasn't he fallen into the fire? And then the priest explained to him that Indra used his mystic power to prevent Takshaka falling into the fire. So then Maharaj Janmajai, he ordered, then let Indra and Takshaka fall in the fire, form another yajna, Indra and his Takshaka fall in the fire. So then the priest performed this extra yajna where Indra and Takshaka were going to fall into the fire. So then Indra found himself being pulled to the fire, and he could see he was falling into this fire for his devastation. And so he went to his spiritual master, Brihaspati, Putty, and said, do something, I'm about to get devoured by this fire. So then Brihaspati, he went and explained to Maharaj Janmijaya that sometimes somebody is seen to die prematurely. This might be maybe as a result of snake bite or fire or lightning strike or flood or earthquake. So we see around the world, in Australia it's bushfires, people often die prematurely in bushfires. In other places, like in Iran, there's a lot of people die in earthquakes. In China, there was a big earthquake last year. Tsunami. So once every 100 years, there's a tsunami. People living on the coast get washed into the ocean. Because one interesting thing about that tsunami is that, from the karmic point of view, the tsunami, what happened initially was the water in the ocean, it went out about 200, 300 metres. And some of the fishermen, they thought, oh, this is very good. We can just walk out and catch them. Instead of bringing our nets, we can just walk out and get the fish from under the rocks and whatever. They thought this is very good. And some of the tourists, they also thought, oh, this is very interesting. We can walk 300 metres out and see the bottom of the ocean. But then what happened was the water came in with the tsunami, and all those people who went sightseeing in the dried up ocean, they got drowned. But at the same time, it was reported that some of the animals, before the tsunami hit the land, they ran up into the mountains. They became frightened and ran up into the mountains. So this is a great mystery. How does this happen? How is it that human beings with their developed intelligence perform activities that result in their destructions, and the animals with no intelligence, they perform activities for their survival? Do animals study tsunamis? Granted, there's only a tsunami for 100 years. Is it passed down in their genetic material? Great mystery to science. But of course, the devotee knows that Krishna is seated in the heart of every living entity. He's directing the wanderings of all living entities. Ishvara Sarvodhanam, that's the verse. Vridashayajjanshini. So Krishna is seated in the heart. So he tells the animals, run into the mountains. Save yourself, run into the mountains. He's directing the animals. And the human beings are saying, go and have a look at the ocean, the dried up ocean. Now is the time for your destruction. So Brihaspati, he started preaching to Maharaj Janmijaya that sometimes somebody may die in fire, somebody may die from flood, somebody may drown, somebody may die in lightning strike, earthquake, tsunami, whatever. Sometimes we may lament, oh, he died prematurely. And there may be great lamentation. It was expected. So Maharaj Pritchard also, he was in the prime of life. It wasn't that he was an old man. He was at the peak of health and fitness and vitality. And therefore one might lament, oh, he's died well before his time. But Brihaspati explained to him, but actually, that was their time to go. That was from the results of their previous activities, this was their time to go. Of course, in Maharaj Pritchard's case, it wasn't actually the results of his previous activities, but Krishna wanted to call him back to the spiritual world and wanted the Bhagavatam to be spoken. So in this case, it's actually the explanation for his death is transcendental, or transcendental reasons for his death. But for the ordinary person, if they die prematurely, it's not actually that they're dying prematurely, it's actually that they're destined to die at that particular time. So Brihaspati explained that to Janmijaya. He said, one snake is responsible for your father's death, but therefore you don't have the right to kill all the snakes. You don't have the right to trample on the rights of others. The snakes also have a right to live. Therefore, if a snake attacks you, then you may kill it. But generally, the best idea is to leave the snake alone. Generally, if you encounter a snake, the snake will be frightened of you and it will run away. So just let it run away. Don't disturb its right. It also has a right to live. So Brihaspati was explaining this to Janmijaya. If you continue this yajna where all the snakes fall into the fire, this will be very simple. You're killing so many snakes, unnecessary. The same thing happened in the fourth canto with Dhruva Maharaj. His brother was killed by the Yakshas. Therefore, he went to war with the Yakshas and wanted to kill all the Yakshas. At that time, Narad Muni appeared before him and explained, one of the Yakshas is responsible for your brother's death, but therefore you don't have the right to kill all the Yakshas as a result of one of the Yakshas being responsible for your death. So, you may punish that person, the defenders. You may attack a snake that's about to attack you, that's going to attack you, but you don't have the right to kill all snakes like that. You don't have the right to trample on the rights of others. That will bring sinful reactions. So therefore, Maharaj Janmijaya, he desisted in the yajna, and therefore Indra was spared based on the preaching of Brihaspati to him. One has to get the reactions of one's previous activities, and therefore one should be very careful in the course of that one's activities. So getting back to the bushfires, yes, it's not true. It's correct that the persons that were burned didn't necessarily have anything to do with the abortion war or other things that were going on. But as a whole, the state could look at the situation and ask themselves, are we really going in the right direction with this abortion law, with the casino culture? You know, they have this casino and they encourage these Chinese people to come down, high rollers they call them, to gamble large sums of money. Sums of money that people shouldn't be, that even from a material point of view, nobody should be gambling this sum of money. And what actually happens, a lot of these Chinese people, they go back and they get arrested by the government or they commit suicide. Only 44% didn't come back. And many of them were losing huge sums of money and therefore becoming very depressed and committing suicide. Or they could, or the government are allowing these poker machines in poor areas. People are very vulnerable. Scarce water is being used to grow wine grapes, isn't it? Feed beef cattle like that. I noticed, I've come here, I grew up in Melbourne, lived here for 43 years, and the last 5 years I've been in Perth. I've noticed that this is the first time I've come here and all the sports ovals, the grass is brown, dried up, dead, like that. It's the first time I've ever seen that. when I was a kid, we had a drought that lasted 1 or 2 years, but now you see the Victoria's perpetual drought and these bushfires, more people killed than ever before. The technology all failed. You know, they had helicopters that were supposed to see where the fire was, but there was too much smoke, the helicopters couldn't see where the fire actually was. And they had television, radio, mobile phone communication, but all the communication towers burnt down. And then people tried to escape in their cars finally, but then in some cases there was too much smoke, they couldn't see where they were going. There was a tree down on the road, therefore they couldn't proceed with their journey. Like that. So more people have been killed than ever before. So then the government should ask itself, are we really going in the right direction? This is the point. If there's some trouble in the land, then the government should ask ourselves, are we actually going in the right direction? So this is, from the other perspective, we can see, well, these disasters are coming. These are a result of the collective sinful activities of the population and the government. The first duty of government actually is to see that religious principles are being followed. All over the world, people capture the reins of government, and they think the idea is, now I've captured the top government position, therefore I'm the best person in the country, therefore I should get a good salary, and I should fly to conferences in Hawaii, have my own private jet, fly to conference in Hawaii or the Swiss Alps. They had this conference, this financial conference in the Swiss Alps, and some wit said, these are the same people that last year created so much disaster. Now they've got together again this year, why should we have any faith in what they're doing? So they capture the top posts of government and they think, oh, let me fly around to different conferences here and there. Let me award government contracts to my friends. Let me give well-paid positions, comfortable positions, easy positions to my friends, people who voted for me. Let me, the developers who gave me money, you know, property developers, they can make huge sums of money. If they've given money to my party, then let me do some deals. Let me give them generous property development deals. This goes on all over the world, not just in India, Australia, but America. Everywhere this goes on. People capture government and they think, now, I've performed this austerity, I've gone on the campaign trail, I've begged the people for votes, now I've got the top position, now let me reward myself and my friends. But from the Vedas we understand that actually becoming a leader in Kali Yuga is very dangerous because you have to take 1/6 of the karma of all the or everything that the people are doing throughout the kingdom. So actually in Kali Yuga it's very dangerous. In Kali Yuga people are performing all kinds of sinful activities. Even if they make alcohol or abortion illegal, it's known that then people distill alcohol illegally, isn't it? Because in India you had, alcohol prohibition until 1975, but then people were still distilling it illegally. So the government, they were unable to change people, so then they said, well, better we make the alcohol and sell it for release, that way the money comes to the government, rather than going to the corrupt persons of the mafia, the Indian version of the mafia. Same thing happened in America. In the 1920s, might have been a bit later, they had prohibition, they prohibited alcohol. But all that happened, but the people still had the taste or desire for alcohol, so what happened was the mafia got into the illegal alcohol business, the bootlegging of alcohol. And so after a decade or so, they they reversed it and they again allowed alcohol. And Prabhupada said also that he blamed the government, because it was 1975 that they again allowed alcohol to be sold in Bombay. Previously they had prohibition. And Prabhupada said that they failed to change the hearts of the people, therefore people were buying the alcohol. So they didn't give people the higher taste, the higher experience of Krishna consciousness, therefore people were buying the alcohol illicitly. And therefore now they, instead of letting them buy illicitly, they have government liquor shops, and people go to the government liquor shops. This way the government can have more revenue. So Prabhupada was very critical of the Bombay government for allowing for changing regulations. But he was critical from the point of view that they didn't actually change the consciousness of the population, therefore the population were consuming alcohol illicitly. Getting back to the original point, was that, so in Kali Yuga it's very dangerous to take a government position, become a government leader, because people are performing all kinds of things like meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling. There are legal casinos and there are illegal casinos also. So people are performing all kinds of similar activities, and then as a leader you have to take one-sixth of your actions, so therefore it's not very wise to become a leader. They're thinking, I've got the top post, let me enjoy myself and let my friends all get high salaried positions. But actually you're getting so much karma. Therefore the first duty of religious principles described in the Vedas is to make sure that the citizens of the state are following religious principles. So Prabhupada gives the example that Maharaj Pariksit, he went out touring the kingdom, but it wasn't tour the kingdom to see where all the resorts were, where the nice beaches were, where the nice forests were, where the nice mountains were, where the good hotels were. He was going out to see whether people were following religious principles. And when he saw a sudra dressed as a king beating a bull, then he immediately took up his sword to punish that offender. That offender was Kali, who was a sudra, but had taken the form of king. This indicates in this age of Kali, people pose as kings, but they're not actual kings. They're just sudras who have put on the cloth of a king. A king means actually somebody who's interested in protecting religious principles, protecting the civil citizens, protecting the population. But in this age, the leaders of government, they're the first people to cheat the population, to cheat the people out of their money, out of their taxes, out of their savings, like that. So very dangerous in Kali Yuga to take a very prominent government post. So the government leaders actually take one-sixth of all the reactions of the population, and therefore their first duty, their first responsibility is to make sure the people are following religious principles. And their first, and this is also their first protection for themselves. They want to protect themselves. They have to make sure that, protect themselves from negative karma, they have to make sure the citizens are following religious principles. So people have the wrong conception in Kali Yuga. They elect somebody and then that person thinks they can reward themselves and their friends. But actually everybody is subject to the laws of material nature. So these laws of material nature are very strict. So that's one side of Krishna, is that he's very strict. He gives these laws of material nature, which are very strict. Same time, he's very forgiving. If you want to turn towards Krishna, he hasn't become angry with you because you have turned your back on him or because you've performed sinful activities. He hasn't become angry with you, permanently angry with you. He hasn't, even you've hated him, you've hated Brahmas, you've hated cows. He hasn't become angry, he hasn't become vindictive like that. These are all material qualities. Sometimes, in some countries, particularly some Islamic countries, they pass very harsh laws. They imagine that God is very punitive, vindictive. Therefore, somebody converts out of Islam, converts to Christian or Hindu or something, and therefore they order them to be executed, and they have death penalty or flogged like that. So they have this conception of God, very harsh, very vindictive. Well, this is not Krishna. Krishna is, we see in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is engaging in loving pastime with all his devotees. Our experiences in the material world may be negative, and therefore the conditioned soul may put negative connotations of God. Sometimes people say, "Oh, you see, there's so much suffering in the world, therefore there can't be any God, or there is a God, he's not very good." But the analogy can be made that in the prison, the prisoners may have a negative experience of the prison. They're surrounded by bars. The warders tell them what to do. They can't do this, they can't do that, isn't it? They're not allowed to go on the internet. They're not allowed to go outside the jail. They're told what they have to eat. They don't have so much freedom, so much choice. And I think, the government's very bad, the state's very bad, the police is very bad. So their experience of the state may be very negative. But that's just because from their point of view that they've broken the laws of the state and therefore they're having their experience safe. Somebody else, they may be getting a pension from the state, or they may be getting free education from the state. They may have a very positive experience of the state because they want to make a useful contribution to the state. Therefore, they go to university or whatever, and they find that the government helps them with their university tuition. So they have a positive experience of the state because they want to do something positive for the society. On the other hand, if one is doing something negative for the society, one may have a negative impression of the state. But actually, the state is impartial. So also, Krishna is impartial. If you want to cause harm to other living entities, Krishna gives you the freedom to do that, but he doesn't take the reactions for doing it. You have to take the reactions for doing that. So people wrongly conceive of God as being punitive or vindictive. And sometimes this can be hard in terms of preaching. So we often have to make these analogies, such as one's experience of the state, depending on what one's desire is. One wants to become qualified as a doctor, so one goes to university, and it's known that the government, they subsidise the tuition to do it, so you can become a doctor and make a useful contribution to society. On the other hand, if you want to harm society by robbing banks, by cheating people, then you may have a negative experience of the state, where the state locks you up within four walls, and the warders make you work hard, and they give you 50 cents an hour for all your labour, with not much freedom. They tell you when you've got to go to bed, when you've got to get up, so on and so forth. So you have a negative experience of the state. So everybody can have a positive experience of God by engaging in this Krishna consciousness. It's not that it's just for some people and not for others. Sometimes people think, you can be a devotee of Krishna, but that's not for me. It's not my style, not my taste. But actually, it's everybody's style and taste, because everybody's ultimately spirit soul. One may be confused with material conditioning, but actually everybody is pure spirit. The ultimate identity of everybody is pure spirit. So when we preach to people, they may have these misconceptions about God, and so we have to overcome them and explain that in the spiritual world, everything is blissful, full of knowledge and eternality. So this distinction is made. In the material world, everything is temporary, full of suffering and full of ignorance, and in the spiritual world, everything is permanent, full of bliss and full of knowledge. Therefore, the material world is very frustrating. Therefore, people's experience is very frustrating. You enjoy for a certain time, and then suffering has to come after that. And even your enjoyment, it's cut off by time. So we read in the Krishna book how Krishna's enjoying with the cowherd boys. They imitate the different calls of the frogs and the birds, and they have piggyback fights and so on and so forth. They play games with bats and balls like that. And we may think, we had those experiences when we were a boy. Also, we had that certain enjoyment. That gives us an idea of that enjoyment, but obviously that enjoyment we had as a boy, it's not permanent, because your body changes also. It's like you get to university level, you won't be walking around the university playing marbles or piggyback fighting or imitating the calls of peacocks or crows or whatever, because your body's changed. Your enjoyment is temporary. Or somebody may be a young man, young woman, and they like going to the disco or the nightclub and dancing. But after some time, after some years of doing that, it starts to get ridiculous. In your 30s, you're still doing it. In your 40s, you're still doing it. It gets ridiculous. So it has its time, but then time passes also. Or one may like having the idea of having children. One might like babies or like children, and therefore one has children. So you may do that for a few years, but at some point it may get ridiculous also. You've had three children, you're going to have five children, 10 children, 20 children, like that. It gets ridiculous. And in any case, past 40, past 45, a woman generally becomes infertile, so there's a limit in time. So we have the friendship, relationship between boys and girls, parental. We have it in the material world, but it's all subject. There's a time, and then that time passes also. So it's temporary, and it's frustrating, and it's ultimately it's disappointing. We don't quite get the satisfaction that we're expecting we're going to get from it. But these types of enjoyment, they give us the idea of the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, the cowherd boys, they are cowherd boys eternally. Eternally they're enjoying this thing. It's not that they grow up and then they no longer enjoy piggyback fighting or imitating the calls of the crows, or no longer enjoy hitting a bat and playing bat with the bat and the ball. These things are going on eternally. And it's not that there's any ignorance involved. So in the translation, the purport here, Vidhananda Maharaj mentions that the gopis from Vrindavan are unsophisticated village girls. They manifest themselves as unsophisticated village girls, as cowherd girls, in terms of Krishna's lila, to give pleasure to Krishna. They manifest themselves that way, but actually they're the greatest scholars also. The gopis are mentioned here, but the Manjari is even younger than the gopis. The gopis are at an age where they're able to enjoy with Krishna in this conjugal love. The Manjaris are even younger. They don't enjoy in the same way. So if the gopis and Vrindavan are unsophisticated village girls, then the Manjaris are even younger. But amongst the Manjaris, you have Rupa Manjari, and they manifested in Chaitanya Lila as the six Goswamis, and the six Goswamis gave the greatest philosophy of any person in the history of the human race. So it's not that their position as gopis and Manjaris, that there's something lacking in their intellectual development. That's a mistaken understanding. They are fully conversant with all the shastras. And therefore, sometimes in Krishna's lila, they reveal that they actually know all the shastras. They mention that Krishna, sometimes they say, Krishna, you're a very bad person, because when you were Rama and Lakshman, you cut off the nose of Supanaka, who wanted to enjoy conjugal love with you. And when you were Vamana Dev, you cheated Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj offered you some charity, but you took everything he had. So sometimes they come out with this very wonderful philosophy. It's not that their unsophistication is a result of ignorance. The material world, somebody's unsophisticated, is a result of the material ignorance. But the gopis, it's their unsophistication, or their apparent unsophistication, is not a result of ignorance, but it's the way they manifest themselves for the enjoyment of Krishna. And then they can also, they're not limited by their manifestation. Other times they manifest themselves as they may come to this world and preach Krishna consciousness, and therefore they manifest the highest philosophical understanding. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is that we have to hear from the Shastra, that we should always be reading Bhagavad Gita, Shrimad Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, in order to get a clear conception of God and God consciousness and the position of the devotees. Otherwise, from material consciousness, we try and speculate, use mundane logic, mundane thinking, mundane historical references, then we'll get incomplete understanding of Krishna. And therefore, we have to not only come to Bhagavan class, we'll kindly come to Bhagavan class today, but also we should go away, study these books, study these shastras, and therefore understand the position of Krishna, understand Krishna's transcendental qualities, how Krishna is not affected by any of these mundane qualities like vindictiveness or punitive or jealousy or envy. These mundane qualities, these don't affect Krishna. These are products of the modes of material nature. They don't affect Krishna. Krishna's qualities are always transcendental, and therefore we can resolve the sort of bushfire dilemma between the different Christian priests are debating about whether this is an act of God or this is an act of God. We actually have by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Charles, we actually have the complete understanding of what's going on. Those persons who died in the bushfires, that was their time to die. When the state is afflicted by drought, bushfires, earthquakes, floods, tsunamis, this is a message to the leaders that they're not going in the right direction. At the same time, God is not punitive or vindictive. He is prepared to forgive, but he's forgive all whatever sinful activity we've done, but we have to refrain from sinful activity in the future. So I'll stop there and ask if there's any comments or questions. Samsara Dharma Nalalika. So it's always a blazing fire.
You say that the bushfire doesn't have to be set. It happens with the friction of the bamboos.
Yeah.
Similarly, because you're situated in the material world, the modes of material nature are clear, so there will be miseries. You don't have to set miseries to come to you. They will automatically.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. The example is given that just as the calf can find its mother cow amongst thousands of cows, you ever heard of thousands of cows, but each calf can find its mother amongst that herd of cows. Another example I saw recently was in South Georgia, they have a penguin colony. South Georgia is an island just north of Antarctica, and there's a penguin colony. Some of you have seen these pictures of thousands of penguins. They stand upright. They look sort of like human-like, but they've got penguin bodies. There's thousands of them standing on the shore. And in the morning, they all go out and they catch fish in the ocean. That's their food. So in the evening, the baby penguins, they come back, and standing on the shore there are thousands of parents, thousands of penguins. But each baby penguin is able to find which, and all the penguins look, to us, all the penguins look the same, but each baby penguin, it can find which one's its mother. It knows which one's its mother. Even though all the penguins look the same, each penguin's able to, so certainly your karma will find you. There's another story that's told that there was a king, and he went to an astrologer and he asked the astrologer, when am I going to die? And the astrologer said, you're going to die at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So the king was in peak of health and fitness, and he said, so how am I going to die at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? And the astrologer said, you're going to be killed by a boar, a pig. So the king then he thought, okay, I'm going to be killed by a pig at 3 o'clock, therefore I'll close up my palace and I'll stick armed guards around every door of the palace. And this way, no boar will be able to kill me. I've called my army, they're all standing around the side of the palace, and I'm going to go to the top of the palace and big walls, so no boar is going to be able to kill me. So when it came to 3 o'clock, he opened the door of one of the rooms of his palace, and then this ornamental boar fell on top of him and killed him. So this story indicates to us that our karma will act even when we take preventative measures. Like in the bushfire, they have so many preventative measures. They have the fire brigade. They have 4,000 fire brigade all activated on the day. They knew the day was going to be dangerous. They activated all the fire brigades. My father was even saying to me, they have very sophisticated firefighting nowadays. They have so many fire trucks with water cannons and helicopters to water bomb them. But he was saying, in the 30s, he was a volunteer firefighter in Belgrave, in the bush country out there. And he said, in those days, we used to go out with brooms to put out fires. We used to bash the fire with a broom. So the technology's got a lot better for fighting fires, but still, more people have been killed than ever before. So how is this? The explanation is karma. Karma will slay. So you're taking so many preventive measures, but your karma will lack. So this king, he took preventive measures. No boar is going to get me. What kind of wild boar is going to get past my armed guards with my palace completely sealed up? But still the ornamental boar fell on top of him at 3 o'clock at the adjusted time. So we can't escape from our karma from material adjustments. That's the point. Apparently, I was mentioning this point in class in Perth, and there was one devotee there who comes from Iran, a Muslim country, and he was saying the Quran also mentioned that your karma will come into a way in which you're not expecting. Your reactions to your previous activities will come in a way that you're not expecting. So people are thinking every day, the last few years, every day they're thinking that if hundreds of people in the diocese community come from terrorist attack. Every day in the newspaper, somebody's been arrested from terrorism, someone's been tried for terrorism. The government are telling the police to infiltrate groups that may be connected with terrorism. At the airport, they're checking people for terrorism. Anything, but then people die from bushfire. So your karma will—if you're going to violate the laws of God, your karma will catch up with you, despite your best intentions to prevent it. Does that cover your point? No.
Yes, sir. Would you like to tell us how Kamdev is not able to disturb Krishna's mind?
Because Krishna is up and around, he's self-satisfied.
So Kamdev, what is that?
Yes, so he doesn't get disturbed. So therefore, Hrinamani mentioned purpose. Sometime he was dancing with the gopis became proud, he left the rasa dance. He was carrying Radharani became proud, he left Radharani. So he's completely self-satisfied. So the point from that is we can't pay Krishna off. Also, sometimes people, they perform very sinful activities, but then they give some money to the church. Like in Italy, you have the mafia, and they do all nonsense, prostitution, alcohol bootlegging, drugs, extortion, contracting, so on and so forth. But then they give money to the church, and they think God can be paid off. They think, because I can be paid off, I'll do some criminal activity. Like if the mafia pay me $1 million, I'll go and shoot somebody. I can be paid off. Therefore, God can be paid off also. This is the mundane conception. God will be better. So they think, I'll do all these things like activities and I'll give some money to the church and therefore I won't get any, God will protect me because he's very happy that I've given some money to his church. But it doesn't, God doesn't work like that. God can't be bribed like that. In Shastra also you have Duryodhana. He arranged a very elaborate feast. He got all the best cooks, all the best ingredients, and he wanted to offer it to Krishna. But Krishna said, no, I'm not taking anything because you are envious of Arjuna and Yudhisthira. You want their property, you want their kingdom. I'm not interested in all this feast. You're doing it with the wrong motive. But at the same time, so Krishna, he rejected Duryodhana. You had all wealth. So he had the very best ingredients, the very best cooks, best offering ever, and Krishna rejected it. At the same time, was it Sudama Brahmana? He was in such ecstasy feeding Krishna that instead of giving the bananas, he gave the banana skins. So normally banana skins are not very palatable. But Krishna, he ate the banana skins because he was tasting the devotion of that. So Krishna might eat banana skins and reject the big feast because the banana skins were offered with devotion. But the big feast is offered with the wrong type of mentality. So, yeah, so around the world, people sometimes think they can pay off God. We can do all, like in Burma, the generals, they exploit and dominate the people, and if anyone opposes them or criticises them, they arrest them and punish them and beat them and so on and so forth. But they give some money to the Buddhist monks, and I think this way the gods will be happy with them. But it doesn't work like that. You have to get reaction to what you do. God can't be bothered. So this is a good point. His mind and senses are completely under control. Therefore, he can't be paid off. You or I might be paid off. Somebody else enough money, we may do something illicit or illegal. But God cannot be paid off like this. So the Buddhist monks in Burma, I've heard in Japan also, the Japanese mafia, they pride themselves on giving some money to the Buddhist monks. But this is not going to counteract your sinful reactions. So he's got $1,000 to spend in hell. Yeah. So thanks for bringing that point up. There's another aspect of it is that because Krishna has no desire for material or spiritual sense gratification, therefore he's pleased by loving devotion. But it's not that we can bribe him like that because he's not an ordinary person. We're not able to bribe. If the price is high enough, somebody may do something that we want them to do, even though it's illegal or dishonest and has negative karma, but Krishna is not like that. So therefore, the point I'm trying to bring forth from the class is that we have to understand Krishna's position from the Shastra and not put our own mundane conceptions. Our conception may be everybody can be paid off if the price is right, but this doesn't apply to Krishna. Krishna is completely self-satisfied. He has no desire for material sense gratification, and therefore we can offer him all kinds of things, but if it's done in the wrong mentality, some sort of jealous or envious mentality, then he won't accept it. But if it's done in a loving mentality, even the offering is not so good, he will accept it. Also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he offered the very old rice. He accepted the very old rice that was offered by Raghunath Das Goswami. The rice was so old that even the cows wouldn't eat it. But he accepted that because it was offered with so much devotion. Even though the rice was so old that even the cows wouldn't eat it.
Can you correlate bushfire and barbecue?
Generally, if the kingdom's experiencing all sorts of problems, drought, bushfire, so on and so forth, then yeah, it's all connected. It's all connected to the sinful activities. In the Vedic Shastras, it's mentioned the king's responsible for if there's drought, famine. The king's responsible for that. It's not that he said, "Oh, just acts of nature or acts of God or whatever." He's actually responsible. He's meant to be able to. Because he's meant to be seeing the religious principle followed, and the religious principle followed, then the citizens should be benefited. So therefore, there was one there was one king, and he kept having sons, and they kept dying, and therefore he went and accused Arjuna of having children and they're dying. So you're the king, and this is not meant to happen in your kingdom. So that story's there, the story there in Mahabharata. So Arjuna said, "Well, I will put a wall of protection around around it, but still, and cool. So in this way, Arjuna, he was prepared to end a fight. I failed to fulfill my duty to the king because this Brahmin, he keeps losing his sons like that. So the king had very great responsibility to make sure all the citizens were happy and protected. But he did that, but first thing he had to, his first responsibility was to make sure the people were following religious principles. No barbecues. No casinos.
Why are you saying barbecue? Because barbecue, we are producing flame to kill the animals. Similarly, the bushfire.
Yeah. There's some connection maybe there. Yeah, America also, they have these very bad places where they like the barbecues to be connected. And places where they drill for oil, they get earthquakes. Because the oil is said to be the blood of Mother Earth. And therefore, there's a connection between oil drilling and earthquakes. Okay. Contrachimukavacham ki chai.